And good morning. Here we are with Wednesday Talk Radio. Once again, I'm Paul Rowland here at KBOO. And that was A Tribe Called Red with Electric Powwow. And we'll be talking about why that song in a second here. So my guests are Andulia Sanchez White Elk, who has played roller derby for over 10 years, had played with the Rose City Rollers, Storm City Roller Girls, and Portland Renegade Roller Derby. Now the manager for Team Indigenous, which is what we'll be talking about today. And Mick Wagoner has also played roller derby for over 10 years with the Rose City Rollers, Gotham Roller Girls in New York City, as well as on Team USA. And she has been to the World Cup before and also has her own coaching business, Swagger Coaching. And we're talking about Team Indigenous Decolonize Roller Derby, an event coming up this Saturday at Gresham Skate World. Welcome.
Thank you. Yatta Ebene.
So, I didn't ask you your tribal affiliations, but first, why Electric Powwow? Is that a song that's like played during the roller derby matches or something? Or?
Oh, it's just one of those songs by A Tribe Called Red that just really kind of like pumps you up and makes you like think about your, think about your people. And I get real excited listening to it.
I can just see it. It has a kind of a roller derby feel to it, although I've never seen roller derby. Why did I say that? Okay, so what's up with, how did you all get into roller derby before we talk specifically about this event coming up Saturday? And Andulia, you want to start out?
Oh, gosh. I went to a roller derby bout years ago, and my friend, her derby name is Sugar and Vice. Me and her went to a bout, and after the bout, she was like, "You were born to do this." And I was like, "I don't know." And she goes, "Yes." She says, "You were born to do this." And so I believe they had a tryout like a month later or something, and so we went to try out.
Were you a good skater already?
No.
No?
No.
You didn't skate at all?
I hadn't been on skates since I was like 11.
Wow.
And yeah, kind of showed. But yeah, we tried out, and I didn't make it the first time. I was actually, I went into reffing, and then I tried out the next time, and I made it. But my friend Sugar, she made it the first time, so, and then we started rolling from there.
Well, we'll talk about, I guess, what it takes to be a roller derbier. But how did you get, Mick, how did you get into it?
Pretty much the same kind of story. Like, I went to the Expo Center when Rose City was the Expo Center. I saw a bout, and I thought, I'm born to do this. I'd been skating since I was six, just skating the streets, kind of like, you know, res kid. Any piece of concrete that I could find, I was skating on, and went and tried out, and after my first 5 minutes, I actually saw Skintastic Dynamite, Andulia, and she kind of did this little shh, which is like a native thing, kind of calling attention. And I looked over and she's like, "You know, your skates are pretty terrible." And I was like, "Yeah." And she asked me if I was native, and I was like, "Yep." And she gave me a pair of skates, and that's
sweet.
It. Been skating since two.
And our co-host, Jacqueline Keeler, just got into the studio. You can take your coat off to relax. You said res kid. So what reservation?
I grew up on the Diné Nation down in New Mexico. And I'm also from the Omaha Nation and the Pawnee Nation.
And you?
I grew up on the Northern Ute Reservation in Fort Duchesne, Utah. And I'm also Carrizo. So, Northern Ute and Carrizo.
What's Carrizo?
Carrizo from Texas.
From Texas? Mm-hmm. Oh, I've heard that. Okay. Great. Well, Jackie, whenever you're ready, you can jump in. I basically just asked them how they got into a roller derby. So, what does it take to be a roller derbyer? People have a lot of different images. I certainly have images. I think of, tough.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just a pair of skates and tenacity, honestly. Mm-hmm. There's so many different people from different backgrounds and different body types and, different, just a variety of women and men and children. And it's, anyone can play.
Yeah, it's really, it just, it just takes desire. It takes a lot of desire. It takes some thick skin.
True.
And, you know, just a desire to watch your body grow.
Let me just let my engineer, if he's listening, her microphone isn't, her headphones aren't working. So we'll just continue. We've got a little technical glitch here. Oh, I guess I hadn't turned it up. That was my fault.
I can't hear anything still, but it's fine.
I think it's the headphones. Okay, so we'll get another set of headphones for her, and we'll continue as we go. And you can probably hear most of what's said.
Yeah, I'm here. So that's what I'm going to tell.
All right, so jump in, Jackie. We were talking about the decolonized roller derby, Team Indigenous. How did Team Indigenous get started?
I've been, as you said earlier, I've played on a lot of teams, and I've played on the current top three teams in the world, which is pretty amazing and a really wonderful opportunity that I had to, and I still have that. To travel the world and coach roller derby and play roller derby and meet a lot of different people, you know, and I played on Team USA. And during that last World Cup experience, I just felt so inspired by the people that I was meeting and the games that I was seeing. You know, watching Team France and Team Argentina play was my favorite game, and it
I didn't
was
even
so.
Know it was played all over the world.
Yeah, it's all over the world, and it's incredible to see these teams play against each other and the different styles each continent has in roller derby. Because some, you know, South America in Pachamama, they're really big artistic skaters and speed skaters, so they bring that skill to roller derby, and in Scandinavia, a lot of people are ice skaters and hockey players, so they bring those skills to roller derby, and you have all of these different styles of roller derby. And I just kept thinking, if I met a big group of Indigenous women, what skills would we bring to the track? And you know, one of the biggest things also about roller derby isn't just skill, but it's also bringing your culture, bringing your cultural values to the track into a team and building that team. And I just kept thinking, oh, I just want a Team Indigenous. And I, you know, I've been friends with Andulia since, you know, for 10 years now, and just kept talking to her about it and talking about my desire. And she finally was kind of like giving me a kick in the butt, like, you got to do this. So I have another friend. She's also Dene from Portland, Maine, the other side of the country. And she just is amazing, and we just got to work and started recruiting people. And in the end, we had around 60 applications of Indigenous women around the world that wanted to be a part of the team.
Huh. So not just from North America.
No. We have two from Aotearoa. We have one from Samoa. We have one from Argentina. And
this
then the rest.
This makes training a little difficult.
Yep, that's for sure. But I, you know, one of the opportunities about traveling so much is that I've got to meet almost everybody and know kind of how people skate and what their style is. And we watch a lot of video. They sent video of what they can do. And so we're like, we built a real good team. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, and it's really, I mean, when Mix, you know, started talking to me about it, she, you know, she, I mean, we both had the strongest desire to do this. Mick was the one that was, you know, still in derby at the time, and she just got the ball rolling, and she just moved, and, you know, we were both just like, yes. So, and now it's come to be, and we're really excited about it.
So where do you, how do you practice then, if you're all over the world?
Everybody practices individually. A lot of people, people are real, like, into cross training in roller derby. And that's one of the amazing things about it is, you know, as you become an adult woman, there's not a lot of sports for us. And so you get into roller derby, and then you realize, in order to be good at roller derby, I really need to start running, or I need to start lifting weights. Mm. And so it's this huge other part of roller derby that's become this big, like, revolution, is that everyone's working out outside of derby. So everybody does that. People share their workouts with each other, videos of what they're working on with their footwork and that kind of thing. And the thing is, like, roller derby's played the same strategically everywhere. So mm-hmm. by the time we get to the World Cup, we'll have two practices together, and I think we're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. Like, I've coached the teams that we're going to be playing against. We're definitely going to hold our own.
And I'm coming late to this, but what got you into doing roller derby? Like, did they already go?
Yeah, we both, the same story. We both saw a game and we're like, let's try out.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. I have a friend who does roller derby in St. Paul, Minnesota, Minneapolis. There's like a large Native community there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's, I do that. But yeah, I'm also Dene, and also a Yankton Sioux, Yankton, Dakota.
All right.
So yeah, and I live here in the Portland area, so.
Awesome.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm up for roller derby.
You can always be a fan.
I know. Definitely. I want to come to your fun. You're having a fundraiser?
Yeah. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, we're having a fundraiser this Saturday at Gresham Skate World, and that is to raise funds for Team Indigenous. And it's a gathering of local skaters here. Storm City Roller Girls, which have been phenomenal in helping me set this up. We have some skaters from Bend. We have some skaters from Klamath Falls coming up. And we have some of our own kind of retired skaters coming out of retirement to come and play this game. So it's going to be really awesome. The theme is superheroes versus villains. So there's going to be some superheroes, and then there's going to be some villains, and we're going to go at it. And
so you mean dressing up in character?
Yeah.
Costumes, awesome. What are you guys going to go as?
I'm Cheetah, Wonder Woman's arch enemy.
Oh, awesome. So. I can't wait to see that. You'll have to post photos, and we can put them up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, also, you guys should come. We brought tickets today.
I'm definitely coming. Yeah, bringing my daughter. So.
Right.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, so she's...
How old is she?
She is 17. So yeah,
have
so
one
she's
of those.
yeah. So she's although she's more like a horseback riding type, animal lover type, vegan Navajo. I don't know. So
the Team Indigenous isn't actually going to be present.
No, the only one from Team Indigenous is going to be me. Mick has to go.
Yeah, I'm headed to Europe. I have a coaching gig in Sweden. And then I'll meet these ladies at the World Cup. So unfortunately, I won't be here. But Skin will, and all of our ex and old teammates and friends, and ladies that, played on all the teams that Skin mentioned, which is going to be pretty great.
And so what's your tag, your derby tag? Your
My name? Derby name is Mick Swagger.
Oh, nice.
Okay, Swagger coaching. I get it. So when and where is the World Cup?
The World Cup is February 1st through 4th in Manchester, England.
This year?
Yeah. It's just within a few weeks.
Wow.
So this is all coming together really rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yep. I mean, it's been a long time. How long has it been in the making, this Team Indigenous?
Team Indigenous, let's see. Well, I coach Team Aotearoa, which is the team from New Zealand. We took on the Indigenous name of the country.
Yes, that's great.
Yeah. And... so I've been coaching them since October of, 2016. So I was coaching them since then. And then we started rolling on the Team Indigenous stuff, I think, in January of last year, 2016. Right. Yeah, so kind of like doing joint duty in both of those teams.
Wow, that sounds like fun. Yeah. So what is it, I mean, as a Native woman, like, what is it like to assert yourself in that way and with other women? Do you know what I mean?
Well, something that roller derby provides is that opportunity for leadership in a different setting. And something that I bring to the table is the Indigenous way of leading, which is a shared leadership. And having one person that helps, keep the team moving forward or keep the group moving forward, but those ideas come from everybody, and everybody gets a chance to say what they want to happen, and everybody has input, and no input, no matter how small the voice, is unheard. And so taking into account all of those things and bringing it together and then building a team up has been a really wonderful opportunity, I think, especially in the last year and a half, with starting with Team Aotearoa. Because I've led other teams before, but I've always tried to fit into that Western mindset of leadership, and it doesn't settle within my bones. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't resonate with me. And So to have the opportunity and to be trusted to put together a team with the way that I know to lead feels like I'm coming into my own finally. You know, I'm like 38.
That's awesome.
And it's just, it feels so wonderful to have that opportunity. And with Team Indigenous, I'm not, we all are leaders on it. So everybody has the opportunity to say, hey, I want to do this. I'm like, great, do that. I'm really interested in merch. Rad, because I have no skills in that area. And everybody's been taking on stuff and doing different types of fundraisers and different parts of the leadership. You know, some people want to like work on the travel portion and some people want to work on the strategy portion. And it's really great to have the ability to do that and to remind ourselves every time we have a meeting that we think about nation, community, team, self, mm-hmm. rather than self-centered first. And I think to be able to have that feels really great.
What's your clan, your Navajo clan?
She'e Hogan Shlane Mishle, Nakai Dene'e Bashishchin, White Buffalo Omaha Deshiche, and Bilagana Deshinale.
I know that. I'm Kia Ani Nishle, you know, and Towering House, and we have like little things like that we're taught about what we're like
yeah.
stereotypes, you know.
Yeah.
And certainly, you know, just ways. I'm not going to go into the stereotypes because I don't want to promote them. It's embarrassing. No, bossy, I guess. I don't know, like in charge. But I mean, how do you feel like coming from a matrilineal society? I mean, mm-hmm. that must bring a different, I mean, there is a different way of exercising power, which you're sort of describing, you know, which
yeah.
is more collaborative and the way, you know, like
yeah.
the way I see my grandmother leading in the chapter house. You
exactly,
know?
Exactly. Exactly. It's like, be like our grandmothers. And, you know, yeah, to be able to talk about that also is really empowering because we come from such a patriarchal world where people don't really understand, oh, there are matriarchal societies, what's that? And so it gives me the opportunity to talk about that and exhibit leadership that way. But yeah, I think definitely like the kind of leadership that I think about as a woman is that collaborative, you know, listening to everything before making a decision and then really mulling it over. I think sometimes I take a little bit too long mulling over those decisions because I really want to make sure that everybody had a voice and was part of the decision. But then you have to make the hard decision in the end. And mm-hmm. that's where I kind of get like, am I doing the right thing? I want to do like the absolute right thing with integrity.
Yeah. Let me just reintroduce you briefly. The voice you just heard was Mick Wagoner, a roller derby player and one of the people who's involved in this event coming up this Saturday at Gresham Skate World. And I thought I was off mic, but I guess not. So that's this Saturday, that's at 1220 Northeast Kelly. Doors open at 5:15. The event starts at 5:30. Again, that's this Saturday. And my other guest is Andulia Sanchez White Elk, who also played roller derby for over 10 years and now is the manager of Team Indigenous. And of course, as always, on the second Wednesday, my co-host is Jacqueline Keeler. I want to ask you both, so, you know, you're talking about this, taking a different leadership style, but have you thought a lot about... what it was like Indigenous game playing before colonization?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think we still have Indigenous game playing. And I actually was watching a really rad video a couple weeks ago my partner shared with me in Oaxaca. These women are bringing back, I can't remember the name of the game. It's like the Mayan game where you hit the ball with your hips.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I've seen that.
It's so awesome. And yeah,
totally,
I was like, I totally would love
awesome.
To play that.
I guess I should have said before and outside of colonization war. You know,
yeah.
Because I thought a lot about, you know, like ice hockey is a blend of some ice game that was played in the North America and a Welsh game. This mm-hmm. is a kind of a hybrid, and it's probably lost most of the elements. And I've read up on it. It's very, you know, many of them were like all community, like the whole community. It's almost like a ceremony. They all, either participated or were present there. It was like a very all-inclusive thing, very different from like highly specialized, you know, sports that we have today.
For sure.
And very, very, and you know, professionalized and kind of separated from the community. The community becomes, you know, the fans in this big stadium, which is very strange.
Mm. Yeah, and I think one of the things with, excuse me, one of the things with Team Indigenous is when Mick was talking about, you know, the Indigenous leadership, part of that is also never leaving somebody behind. Mm. You know, we're always together. We're always there with each other, you know, and that's kind of, that's part of our Indigenous thinking and our Indigenous feeling. And one of the other things about Team Indigenous is part of our proceeds are going to missing and murdered Indigenous women, USA. And so we're really trying to use this platform and in England to shed light on that issue. I've been a domestic and sexual violence advocate for many years. I'm currently an addiction counselor, and so I've seen so much of this, and it's really, really deep in our hearts that you have strong athletic women that are taking on this platform, and it's brand new. You know, this hasn't been done before with roller derby at all, and so we're using that platform to create awareness about domestic sexual violence and missing and murdered Indigenous women, because we know it's been going on for so long and it hasn't had any light shed on it until recently.
Yeah, it's I think I was thinking about that in terms of like Native women asserting themselves, because often they find that when women play sports where they are, you know, being actually having contact, they fight back more when they are, you know, sexually assaulted. And not to say that women don't, but just that there's, maybe that's a dated study, but I heard that before, and I just thought, you know, what it would be like to bring that to our reservation communities, right. And you know, to give women a chance to express themselves that way. And I'm actually traveling back to North Dakota later this month to cover Olivia Lone Bear. She's been she's a missing and murdered, which we don't know. She's been missing for since the end of October,
right. Or,
and they're getting no help from law enforcement, her right. family, and it's in the Bakken where the oil fields were, and you know, they're not as booming as they once were, but they're still pretty dangerous, but it's a huge issue, and I'm so glad you guys are bringing attention. I'm so glad to hear about the work that you've done. And
I mean, it's been going on for so long, but nobody's ever heard about, you know, Indigenous women missing, or nobody's really, you know, cared. And we do. And that's a part of why we're doing this with Team Indigenous as well. I mean, Team Indigenous is strong, athletic, Indigenous women. And we want to portray that. And when it comes to domestic and sexual violence, you're right, you know, women are taught not to fight back. You got to fight. You have got to fight. You know, I mean, and we say that, you know, in a way that, you know, you have to understand, you know, because we've been fighting our whole lives. Our whole lives have been a fight, and we're done.
The numbers are pretty scary. I mean, I think that there was a 2010 Department of Justice report which found that Native women experienced 2.5 times the rate of rape, and in some counties in this country, 9 times the rate of murder.
Right.
And so it affects Native women on a level that most people don't comprehend. And the study also found that 70% of the perpetrators of assaults on Native women are white men.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know,
right.
We're the only group that are assaulted more by men outside of our own ethnic racial group.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So. Exactly. And a lot of that stuff, you know, I mean, has to do with, you know, drugs and human trafficking and, you know, all those things. I used to work in with prostituted people as well in a program that I don't believe is no longer here. Mm-hmm. So I've seen and heard so many of those stories, and you know, it just resonates in my bones, you know, that we need to do something about this. And Team Indigenous gives us the chance to do that. Not only is everybody strong, athletic Indigenous women, but they're women that have this fire to keep our community safe and to spread the word and be as loud as we possibly can about how unjustly and unfair some things are for us as Indigenous people.
And in our traditions, I mean, I know in the Dene and the Navajo tradition, we have the coming of age ceremony, the Kinalda, and where, you know, you are basically formed and shaped as a young woman to be strong. You know, the whole thing is about, you know, doing hard tasks, physical tasks, you know, running every day. You know, you're supposed to wake up in the morning at dawn, and my grandfather used to say, you wake up in the morning and you're supposed to jog and you're supposed to shout while you're jogging, you know, and stuff to get your lungs strong. And he used to tease us. There was a woman he called her Kath Nez. And she's a superwoman. And you're like, I can hear Kath Nez. You know, she's out there talking in the morning. It's like this ethic that women are supposed to be strong.
I mean, we were the warriors in our community. Mm-hmm. And we're the backbone of our society. So absolutely.
Yeah. Let me remind people that this is a talk show. And you can actually call in and ask questions, make comments at 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Again, my guests are two people, one former and one current roller derby player, and both of them involved with this new Team Indigenous. We're talking with Andulia Sanchez White Elk and Mick Wagoner. And coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, Political Perspectives presents Law and Disorder and a look at the book Look for Me in the Whirlwind, From the Panther 21 to 21st Century Revolutions. At 10, Air Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary. 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And 11, The Dirtbag with host Glenn Andreessen. And KBOO, as always, keeps you informed. And you can get involved by volunteering, also by donating. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. Become a member. So let me just mention another thing coming up since I have it in front of me. Get this out of the way. On January 21st, there's going to be an Indigenous Women's March honoring Red Fawn and Indigenous women warriors at Sunday, January 21st. So that's a week from this Sunday at 1 p.m. It's time to decolonize the Women's March and empower the women everywhere who have given their livelihood for us to march forward. I didn't know this. It says Portland Women's March has been canceled. I'm sure there's a whole story behind that. But the matriarch will continue taking the streets on our Indigenous lands wearing red. Women of color leaders, organizers, magic workers, trans sister sex workers, a whole list of people, which I won't go into. We are taking space to put an ask for help in raising funds and awareness for Red Fawn. She's a political prisoner from the No Dapple movement for Standing Rock. At Standing Rock, she's been held captive for over a year and is currently needing funds for her legal needs and to support her sister, who has been taking care of her son, while Morton County still has her detained as she awaits trial. And Berta Caceres is another Indigenous woman warrior who will be honored and carried with us. She was murdered for being an Indigenous activist protecting the sacred water of her Indigenous lands. Anyway, this from a Facebook page. That's next Sunday after this, January 21st. I will put the link to that up on my program page, which is kboo.fm/Wednesday Talk Radio, where I have all the information about who you're hearing from today. So, I can't remember that question I was going to ask, but talk more about the team Indigenous. So, what sort of venues are you thinking of playing? How's that going to work? Where are you going to play? You're just going to be a sort of a traveling team and play, like, just get into the circuit, or?
Well, we're going to be playing at the World Cup, and my deepest hope and dream for the team is that every woman that goes there and experiences that takes that experience back with her, you know, like my first time at the World Cup, and inspires her to create her home, her own Team Indigenous within her community. What I would eventually like to see is that we have a Team Indigenous on as many continents as possible, and we go play each other at the Indigenous World Games. And from those six or so teams, we can create a Team Indigenous and continue to be a part of the Roller Derby World Cup and continue to represent there. But, you know, the dream is that we have many teams and we play each other, and we kind of cut that part out. So it's a good platform. The Roller Derby World Cup is a good platform to bring the team out have that inspiration and just excitement to create a team within our own communities.
That's great. And will it be live streamed at all? Can people watch from
here? It is live streamed. Uh-huh. If you, I don't have the information in front of me, but the Roller Derby World Cup is on Facebook, and they just put out the live streaming information yesterday.
Great.
So it will be live streamed, yep.
Awesome. And will you do any interviews with you guys when you're there, or do sure, Facebook Live, or
yeah,
we've that'd been be great doing, to feature the different players.
Yeah, we've been doing lots of all the different women on the team have been doing interviews with their local newspapers, especially in Canada, the BBC and the CBC. They've been really interested in the team, and when we get there, there is a small crew that's going to be interviewing the team, but we'll all definitely Facebook Live. I'm going to have our SIM cards ready and give them out to the team, and let's make sure we're on Facebook and everybody knows what's up.
That would be awesome. I would love to see that.
Yeah.
And I'm a journalist, so I would definitely like to be right about it. I know that they're lucky in Canada. They have really great coverage, and they have their own television news network.
Yeah.
And stuff, but yeah, here in the States we have to.
Yeah, you can follow us on Facebook, Team Indigenous Roller Derby, and on Instagram, same at Team Indigenous Roller Derby. It's a long tag, but worth it.
Okay.
Again, that's the event, the benefit for the Team Indigenous is this Saturday at Gresham Skaters World, 1220 Northeast Kelly. Starts at 5:30, doors open at 5:15. Again, there's a Facebook page which I will link to. And we're still waiting for our first caller at 503-231-8187. You know, I didn't want you to let you slip away, Jacqueline, before asking you a couple questions about what you've been covering, if you feel like it.
No. I'm a journalist, and I write for a number of outlets, and we're actually in the process of starting our own news magazine run by Native women journalists called Pollen Nation.
Amazing.
And so one of our first things is we're going to be going back to North Dakota this month and covering the missing and murdered Indigenous women's issues with Olivia Lone Bear, and then also the Red Fawn case, which starts on January, scheduled to start on January 29th in Fargo, North Dakota. And certainly her case has not gotten enough coverage. And and the entrapment that she experienced with having an actual undercover agent posing as her boyfriend. That's actually illegal in Britain to do that. They passed a law against, because one guy was
after some really egregious cases.
Yes, he actually had children with one of the people he was spying on. Yeah, it was just, that is sort of a form of assault, you know.
Yes, absolutely.
My holidays were pretty crazy. I was asked to write an article about Kaya Jones. I don't know if you've heard of her, but she is an alleged former pussycat doll performer, singer, who claims to be half Apache. Her father was 100% Apache from a reservation near Dallas, Texas. I know. And so she was appointed to some sort of diversity coalition that supports Trump. That was created by Trump's attorney, Michael Cohen. And and then quickly Native Twitter, started asking her, well, how are you Native? Can you? Mm-hmm. And she couldn't prove it. It was just a story she floated. And so she's still to this day arguing. I mean, it's been going on since the 20th of December.
Okay.
And so while she was trying to fend off questions about her identity, she posted this half-breed video that Cher did back in the 70s, wearing Plains regalia, headdress with a skimpy outfit, and on horseback, right? And of course, for some reason, there's a totem pole, I don't know, and it's just complete appropriation. And then saying that Native people questioning her identity were being racist, like the people in that song were, you know? And so... So anyway, so I was asked to write about this, and I was looking on Native Twitter, and then people were like asking, well, is Cher Native? I mean, they weren't sure, you mm-hmm. know? And then, of course, all those Cherokee genealogists have to chime in, and they're like, we've traced her 9 generations back, no connection to mm-hmm. Native people at all. And I just mentioned, yeah, I know that her father's Armenian. And her mother is a blonde white woman, and her mm-hmm. father's Armenian. That's where she gets her coloring from. Mm-hmm. And then she chimed in, and she attacked me and called me the B word. And said that I wasn't fit to shine her mother's shoes.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. And that her mother actually had dark brown roots mm-hmm. in her hair.
See, people don't realize that Rachel Dolezal, is that her name?
Yeah.
We have like thousands of those in the Native community. A lot of people claiming Native heritage because it's cool or because they have high cheekbones or whatever it is.
Well, here you have people who are doing it for profit, mm-hmm. you know, profit off of it and to perpetuate stereotypes that are negative. I mean, the whole thing of half-breed, the message of it and the sexualization of Native women, mm-hmm. the misuse of our regalia. My father is Dakota, and I'm actually a keeper of an eagle feather headdress that's been in my family for about 120 years. And, you know, I to take that, rip it from its cultural roots and give it this sort of sexualized tone and apply it to Native women, you know, I mean, studies show that there is a correlation, you know, that this leads to the sexual harassment of Native women.
Absolutely.
And the idea that we're sexually available to white men, to conquerors. And mm-hmm.
And I really think, thank you for saying that, because I really think that, you know, it definitely sends a message to our children. I have 3 girls and 1 boy. And, you know, it sends a message to our youth that that's okay, you know. And we know what it feels like, you know, when we see that. We know what it feels like. It something is taken.
Yeah.
You know, it feels like something's really taken from us.
Well, I actually did a Ask Me Anything on Reddit kind of in response to that. And I told people, I said, you know, those headdresses and stuff have incredible meaning, and they actually symbolize a lot of accountability that our leadership had to the people, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a really interesting social model, and you're missing out on that if all you know is, you know, Victoria's Secret models wearing it on the runway. And then Cher and her fans continued to attack Native people who were questioning her. It was really horrible. And then they joined up with those deplorables, those Trump followers of that Kaya Jones person. And together, both the left and the right supposedly attacked mm-hmm. Native people for questioning someone appropriating their identity.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that shows that. Well, I was Dr. Stephanie Freiberg. She's Tulalip, and she does a lot of research on this issue, and particularly in mascots. And she just released some more data, some more research about a month ago, and she said that white people love watching other white people dress up as us, dress mm-hmm. up as Indians, and it makes them feel better about themselves. It creates their group cohesion, and so her and this Kaya person performing her identity for other white people. Right, mm-hmm. is, you know, just the epitome of, you know, that's exactly, it makes them feel good. It makes them feel good about themselves. And it's very hard to fight that. And, but it was interesting. She finally apologized to me New Year's Eve.
Wow, Cher did?
Yeah, at 8:30 p.m. after she got, we were going to do a thing where we weren't going to talk to her fans anymore. We were just going to mm-hmm. talk to each other and kind of, because it'd been like 9 days of of being attacked, and so and then she burst into our little Twitter party, and for like 2.5 hours she was going back and forth, and she's a celebrity. I think that there's this whole, the issue of fans and reducing our issues, or very important issues in our world, to fans are, you know, standing up for someone that they don't really know mm-hmm. but they think they know. Is really detrimental to our society. I mean, we see that with Trump and mm-hmm. his supporters, and it was the same thing with Cher and her supporters. But you know, she did apologize to me, and then she promised to stop singing the song. And also stop using the regalia. She called it, "I'll retire my beautiful costume."
Amazing.
Yeah.
And calling it a costume is completely indicative of what she thinks about it.
Yeah.
So I think she really can. She's got this big Broadway show.
Well, that was
retrospective.
We found out that she actually has a Broadway show, a musical coming up based on her life, mm-hmm. in which they will perform her hits mm-hmm. and do whole musical numbers.
Oh, so she's not in it?
No. Oh, okay. It's based on her life. Yeah. Right. So we had two more requests from her. We asked, number one, that she actually advocate for missing and murdered Indigenous women, use her platform, her voice. Mm-hmm. And then we also asked that she cast, she promote actual Native artists, have them on her shows, and also cast some of them. I mean, if she can play us, we can play her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
If you think you look like us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, we can play half Armenian.
And it's so interesting. People really want to be Native. And it comes in waves sometimes, you know, whatever's trending.
Fashionable.
And I think, you know, for a lot of Indian people, it's just, you know, come October, November, you know, and a little bit around December is where we get the most crap, you know, because, I mean, my kids won't even let me go into those spirit costume stores anymore because it's just not happening with me, you know, so they won't let me go into any of them for Halloween. And, you know, and then we have, you know, on Thanksgiving, you know, and so we're out there and it feels like we're on stage during those months. And it's really hard. It's really hard to have to constantly, you know, reteach, you know, people every day. And I think what Team Indigenous is doing is really being able to say, look, these are Indigenous women. You know, these are real Indigenous women. And I know that we've had some issue around that, just forming Team Indigenous.
Oh, we absolutely have. Even, I mean, that's why we talk about decolonizing roller derby, because even, you know, within every part of Western society, we have these issues. And one of the things in roller derby is that there's a lot of racism. Mm-hmm. I've encountered it. A lot of the women on the team have encountered it. Some people have quit teams. I've quit teams because of it. And it gets tiring and taxing on your spirit. And, you know, I'm set to leave roller derby soon, and I wanted to leave behind a legacy, but in order to push through this last bit. But during our international championships, there was a reference to the Trail of Tears. And I was shocked and sick. And
what kind of reference?
It's a sports reference. People use it. This team is going onto the championship, and this team is hitting the Trail of Tears. Oh. And it's just like, really, you're going to use genocide in such a flippant way? Imagine if it was any other community and you were making a joke about genocide. It would not happen. And I just can't believe that is still around, and it's still around in, you know, this DIY feminist sport. You know, the WFTDA, WFTDA, the Women's Flat Track Derby Association, their mantra is strong, athletic, revolutionary, and they talk a lot about feminism and all of these things, but then we still have this in a national broadcast, an international broadcast, and we broadcast on ESPN. So just imagine if that was the live broadcast on ESPN making a reference to genocide. People think it's funny, and a lot of people didn't know what it was in the international community. And Team Indigenous immediately, like, well, I knew the announcer, and I know all of these women. We've been skating together, and I've been interviewed by them and all of these things for 10 years. So I immediately went to my friend and said, hey, like, what were you thinking? And it was a lot of backtracking, and, oh, I didn't mean to say that. But, I mean, come on. People are preparing their quips as sports announcers. You don't just come up with, you know, something on the spot. You have to be prepared as a journalist.
And they promoted her.
Yeah, and then she got a promotion as, you know, the president of the interim director with a very, let's just call it a very weak apology and not a lot of follow-up. It was Team Indigenous doing the work, specifically many hours on the phone from me on the phone and on the internet trying to educate this community, and I just got so tired and was like, why are we always the ones to have to do that work? And so, you know, we encounter it even within our community that we think is like DIY and punk, but it's not. We're in the suburbs now. You know, we're in like every little tiny community in the world, and that's what Indigenous people are up against. We're up against a lot of racism, a lot of casual racism.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like the stereotypes, I often say, you know, the stereotypes mask our actual realities. Mm-hmm. And so when you care, when it becomes just a little phrase or a saying with no knowledge about what it really means, then it does, you know, leave us open to being dehumanized.
Absolutely.
I think the study that Dr. Freiberg just did, she found that they tried to judge the warmth that white audiences feel towards Native people, and they found that it was only 60%, which 100% would be seeing us as fully human.
Wow.
And 60% puts us closer to actually being animalistic. Mm-hmm. And so the stereotypes have a really detrimental effect on the real issues too, you know, from funding for the Indian Health Service, mm-hmm. to being able to, you know, with the Baby Veronica case, you know, with our mm-hmm. children being taken away by the Supreme Court.
Absolutely.
And so that's it plays on many, many issues. And, of course, with Olivia Lombert not mm-hmm. even being able to get law enforcement to investigate it
yeah.
because they claim there's no crime mm-hmm. with her being gone for this long. So,
yeah, I really think that, you know, in roller derby, there's a lot of racism. And there's just a lot of racism in general. And, you know, everybody wants to be Indigenous, but you don't want our struggle,
mm-hmm.
you know. Yeah. And you know, that's not okay. You know, if you want to be, you know, if you want to be able to support Indigenous people, do it. You know, don't back out. Don't back out when it's time, you know, when it's really hard to do. You know, don't do that. You know, because like Mick said, you know, I mean, we get it in on Team Indigenous, you know, and I was one of the very few, if not the only person of color when I started Rose City Rollers,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I've been told many times in one of the teams that I was too aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And by no
can
means
can you be too aggressive.
I know, right? and you know, and it had nothing to do with aggression.
Yeah,
you know, it had to do
perception.
With
aggressive
right.
in your play style or in your attitude or what?
I think everything, and you know, it had nothing to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
It had to do with me speaking my mind. It had to do with me just being present.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, we look at a lot of things that Western culture prides itself in. And I often bring this up on the show, democracy and women's rights. And where did they get those from? They didn't get those from feudal Europe. They got them from interacting with our communities, with mm-hmm. our culturally intact communities. Even with women's rights, you know, the reason why it happened in Seneca Falls, New York, the first international conference, was because all those women, Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Matilda Gage, they lived, their village was adjacent to a actual Seneca village, and they observed the Seneca women there reorganizing their government, which was shocking to them because they were legally dead in America at the time,
mm-hmm.
American women were, and these were women who they saw every day, and they saw the difference in their communities, how these women were respected. If you read the speeches from Seneca Falls, they specifically say, we see how the Seneca women over there, they can walk around at night without being raped. We can't do that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, very specific things that you can compare in real life. Like, these are rights these women have, and these are rights that we don't have.
Exactly.
And so when you come from a culture, like particularly if it's a matrilineal culture, you know, it is much more acceptable for women to speak out. It's expected, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And women, I mean, if you're with a matrilineal clan system, often the woman is the one who owns the property,
mm-hmm.
you know, all the children are her children. The clan system goes through her line.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The husband goes to live with her family.
Yep.
It's completely, the power is completely different. And so,
mm-hmm.
Even if she's a cute little old grandmother, she has power. Do you
yep.
mean
yeah.
over her sheep, over everything, and that's something that I think white women just don't understand. They've evolved in a different way, cultural way.
Yeah.
I just want to remind people that you've got less than 10 minutes left. We haven't had a single caller.
I think
guess
they're
people
scared
just
to call it.
They're just...
But if you aren't, the number
is
503-231-8187. You better call in the next couple minutes because we're running out of time. And again, my guests are Andulia Sanchez White Elk and Mick Wagoner, both 10-year roller derby players. Andulia is recently retired.
Well, this Saturday will be my very last bout.
Oh, so you're at, wow. Okay. Wow.
Okay, so we definitely
so
have
we should
to go.
Definitely go see the match. So to help Team Indigenous get to the Roller Derby World Cup just in a 2-3 weeks, and that's at Gresham Skaters World, 1220 Northeast Kelly. Game starts at 5:30. You can buy tickets at the door, and also I believe brown paper tickets. So that's that. They're deciding who's going to...
I didn't know what she was talking about.
So, yeah, we'd love for everybody to come out and support Team Indigenous on our way to England to play in the Roller Derby World Cup. Again, we're using that platform to speak about Indigenous issues and come out and see some strong, athletic, you know, derby players and, you know, keep us on your radar. We're on Facebook and Instagram, Team Indigenous, and it's going to be a great time this Saturday. So come on out.
You're talking about, you know, racism in roller derby, as in obviously dominant society, the fact that there are not many people of color, women of color playing the sport, but it seems like the people who are coming to participate are obviously supporting the effort.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah, we're really, really proud to have started Team Indigenous and be able to spread the word. And
it looks like we've got a caller. Carolyn, go ahead, you're on the air.
Yay, Carolyn.
Hello?
I'm calling in answer. I just started listening a few minutes ago, but I note in the little bit of KBOO and, for example, Measure 101 issues, that this organization, his name doesn't come to me at the moment, your roller, whatever, Rose City something, is very, you might say, socially or politically avant-garde. And people are probably listening to find out what they can hear from you directly, not just about you from some media or something or other. And I appreciate listening. That's why I called, is to voice the non-voicing people. So I'm going to get off and let hopefully someone else talk in the next 7 minutes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for calling. If you had been listening, they've been talking all about what you're referring to. And you can actually, people can go back and listen to the show. If you did just tune in, go to kbo.fm/Wednesday Talk Radio for the program This Date, and you can hear this entire program if you missed it.
Yeah, you can check us out on Facebook. We are Team Indigenous Roller Derby, as well as Instagram. This is separate. I think she mentioned the Rose City Rollers. The Rose City Rollers are an amazing organization here in Portland. They were one of the first derby leagues to start, and the largest in the world, actually, the most members. That is a separate entity of then Team Indigenous Roller Derby. And we will be playing this Saturday at Gresham Skate World.
And you helped start Rose City Rollers?
Well, I came in a year after, okay. I believe a year after they started. So I'd been there for a very long time. So
I didn't realize. So this is kind of an epicenter of roller derby here in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I guess I'm kind of like... out of the loop. I guess I'm just an old white guy. But anyway, I've seen a little bit on television. I guess there's these films that depict it. So I've seen some clips. And then there's that horrible, violent film, which I guess was a very exaggerated form of, what was that called? Rollerball?
Was that the 80s one?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I think so.
Well, I'm really excited to see this to go to your fundraiser and see Indigenous women in action. I have friends who do this, Native women, mostly in the Midwest, and I'm always so jealous when they post photos of it. And so I'm really excited that they're bringing it here. It's just very it's a great way to show a different side of Native women, of Indigenous women, and Indigenous women from all over the world. And I love Maori people. I think people from island people are so friendly, and they're just, they have such a wonderful way about them. Maybe sometimes more so than us in the middle of the continent.
I feel like it's interesting. Like, I've been to Aotearoa several times in the past few years, but specifically once a month for the past year, I've spent a week or 2 weeks there, and it's been such a wonderful experience. But one of the things that I appreciate so much is when you meet another Indigenous person, even in another hemisphere, you have so much in common. And when we talked about, you know, they want to know about the medicine wheel and the four directions. What does this mean? And so we're talking about it, and they're like, that sounds like our four pillars of our society. And the one difference is that our social aspect is what they use, what they call hospitality. And so it does make them like maybe a little bit more friendly and welcoming and like, come in here. And it's like, we're social, but you got to get to know us. But it's, you know, all the similarities are there. And we have a couple of Maori women on Aotearoa on that team. And we're going to be doing the haka when we get to the World Cup. So there's going to be a lot of Indigenous representation at the World Cup. And I'm really excited to, you know, show the world and be a part of those experiences.
I love those hakas.
Real quick, we got less than a minute. And Dulia, another plug for this Saturday?
Yeah, this Saturday we are having a roller derby bout to support Team Indigenous get to England for the Roller Derby World Cup. We're having a coordinated effort from people, derby skaters from the Pacific Northwest who will be there to play and help support Team Indigenous. Doors open at 5:15. Game starts at 5:30. $10 suggested donation. Come on out. Nobody will be turned away. Come on out and show your support for Team Indigenous.
Gresham Skaters World, 1220 Northeast Kelly. And all that information is on my program page at kbo.fm/Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm Paul Rowland. Thank you, Andulia, Jacqueline, and Mick.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Yeah.